You are listening to Women's Magazine on KPFA 94.1 FM and online at kpfa.org. I'm Kate Raphael. You just heard me plug my upcoming book launch celebrating the release of my second mystery, Murder Under the Fig Tree. It's the second in my series set in Palestine, featuring Rania Baccarat, a Palestinian policewoman, and Chloe Rubin, a Jewish American peace worker. I'll be reading and talking about the book tomorrow night at an event hosted by Middle East Children's Alliance. That's at 7 p.m. at 518 Valencia in San Francisco, just one block from 16th Street BART. I hope many of you can join us there. There are many kinds of mysteries. There are cozies, the kind you curl up with by a fire with a glass of wine near to hand and a cat on your lap. There are police procedurals where you match wits with the detective and try to unravel the puzzle before she does. There are psychological thrillers where the question's less who done it and more why did they do it and what does that tell us about the human psyche. As a mystery writer, I'm often asked what subgenre my books fall into, and I usually say they're character-driven mysteries because having strong, complex women characters who are learning things about themselves as they investigate the crime is really important to me. But that always seems kind of weird because isn't all literature basically character-driven? I mean, why else do we read, and especially novels, if not to make new friends or enemies on the page? So recently, I've started to say that my books are place-based mysteries because the setting's really integral to the story. I think someone like Laurie King, who's one of my favorite mystery writers, could move her San Francisco series to Seattle or Denver, and it would basically still work with some minor changes to the street names and the kinds of buildings that they're going into. But my stories really couldn't take place anywhere but Palestine. I think my guests today also fall into the category of place-based mystery writers. Michelle Cox holds a BA in English Literature from Mundelein College in Chicago. She's the author of the Henrietta and Inspector Howard series set in the 1930s Chicago. The first book in the series, A Girl Like You, has won over 11 indie publishing awards, including the Gold Medal for Mystery in the Independent Publishers Book Awards and the Forward Reviews. Book two of the series, A Ring of Truth, came out this past April, and it's already placed as a finalist in both Mystery and Romance in the Next Gen Awards. It was listed as a top read by Pop Sugar, BuzzFeed, Redbook, Elle, Yahoo News, Booklist, Cultural List, Bookster, and many others. Book three of the series, A Promise Given, will be released in April 2018. Michelle lives in the Chicago suburbs, and she's hard at work on book four, as well as a weekly blog entitled Novel Notes of Local Lore, a blog dedicated to Chicago's forgotten residents. And Joanne Doucette, whose pen name is J.L. Doucette, is a psychologist who uses her knowledge of the shadow side of the human psyche to create complex characters in a psychologically driven mystery entitled Last Seen. She lived and worked for many years in rural Wyoming, where this missing person's story is set. The harsh and powerful landscape is an integral part of the mystery. This is the first in a series introducing Dr. Pepper Hunt, a forensic psychologist and police consultant. Last Seen received a Distinguished Favorite Award from the Independent Press and was a finalist in the Next Generation Book Awards. Joanne now lives in Rhode Island, where she maintains a private practice, and she's at work on book two in the series, On a Quiet Street. Welcome, Michelle and Joanne.
Hi.
Hi,
Kate.
Thanks for joining us on Women's Magazine. So can you just give us the elevator pitch of your books? Michelle, you want to start?
Sure. Well, as you said, it's a mystery historical fiction series set in the 30s in Chicago. It's about a girl whose father kills himself during the Depression, and she's forced to be the breadwinner for the family. So she takes a job as a taxi dancer, and the floor matron turns up murdered one day, and that sort of sets the ball rolling. The inspector shows up, and, you know, it kind of goes from there.
Joanne?
My mystery, Last Seen, is set in Rock Springs, Wyoming, and the lead character, Dr. Pepper Hunt, is a newly arrived in that place. She becomes almost immediately involved in investigating the disappearance of one of her patients. And again, the story starts from there. It's in the process of investigating it, she gets to know all of this person's relatives and friends and all of the various psychological motivations that each one of them might have had to have some hand in the disappearance.
So I characterized your books as place-based because it seemed to me like the settings were almost a character in the novels, that it was very much about being able to visualize places that I had not been. Would you agree with that characterization?
I think that I would. It's possible that you could take this story and put it in any big city in the 30s, maybe New York. But it is key to Chicago because there's that gangster Al Capone sort of underworld running through it and sort of the gritty neighborhoods in Chicago. So I do feel like, and with all of the fact that she was a taxi dancer and she was a 26 girl, which was a dice game in Chicago alone, just specific to that city, was important in the story.
And for me, I definitely agree. One of the reasons that I set the story there was because I personally had a very profound experience of encountering that part of the world, having lived until age 40 in the Northeast, relocated to Rock Springs, Wyoming, and was completely sort of overtaken by how different everyday life was, how different my experience was, just by virtue of living in a physically different place. It happens to be a place where soda ash is mined. It's not a pretty place at all. It's very rough. It's very tough, harsh. The weather is cold. The wind blows all the time. And you really have, I had the sense anyway, of living sort of like outside of, you know, what for me was like a normal community and society. And one of the things that happened shortly after I moved there was a missing persons case of a young woman disappearing. And when I thought about that, that happens all the time. People go missing from cities. But the idea that someone would kind of disappear in this wilderness with no familiar touchstones just started me thinking about, you know, writing that story.
Michelle, you said at an event that I was at last night that, and also in, I think, the intro to your book, that your first mystery, A Girl Like You, also drew a lot on stories that you heard from one person that you met in a nursing home. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you would have written this novel if you hadn't heard those specific stories?
I don't know. At the time, I was hearing so many stories, and I would often, you know, go home and, you know, tell my husband or my mom, and she would say all the time, you should really write these into a book. And I thought at the time, that's not for me, or nobody would find these interesting. It's just, you know, that I'm peculiar or something. But later in life, when I was kind of searching around for an idea, it seemed like the perfect fit. There was enough there to the story that I could expand and fictionalize it. There was so much to this woman's life that was amazing to me that I felt it could be a really good novel.
You also do this blog that's about forgotten Chicagoans or people that are not so well known. How do you find the people that you interview?
I'm taking them all from when I worked there about 25, almost 30 years ago now. And that was kind of my job. I was hired to be the admissions director at this nursing home, and I was actually really terrible at it because my job, I didn't realize at the time, was to be an ambulance chaser, really, is to, you know, schmooze with hospital discharge units and get them to release people to us. And that was just not me at all. And I was, usually never in my office. I was out on the floor, like helping people find their sweaters or whatever it was. And they said, you know, I think we're going to move you into social service. Seems a better fit, which was perfect because that was my job, which was to, you know, write these little stories of people to get their background information. And it was supposed to be a paragraph. And I would write pages and pages and pages. And the staff really loved them. They're like, oh, we read the latest story. It was great.
So, Joanne, what was it about hearing the story of this missing person that made you decide that you were going to write a suspense novel as opposed to something else, drawing on that theme?
Well, I think it's inherent in the disappearance, right, is the mystery. And for some reason, I'm not sure I understand why the idea of someone just disappearing is an interesting idea to me. In the book that I wrote, part of what's going on is that the character who eventually disappears has a psychiatric condition called dissociation, in which when she's confronted or reminded of some trauma, she will temporarily kind of dissociate from the present moment. I've treated patients who've had this, and it can last minutes, hours, days, where people can live their lives not being sort of in themselves, and then they sort of kind of wake up somewhere and wonder how they got there. So that also is a fascinating concept for me, that someone could make their way through life for a couple of days and not really be in conscious of their own experience. So I guess that phenomenon of dissociating, disappearing, the question is like inherent in that. Why did this happen? What caused it? And what's going to happen after the fact? It seemed to lend itself to a mystery.
And your book also delves into something that I have only just heard of recently, and that is equine therapy. So can you talk a little about, first of all, what that is? Because I'm sure a lot of my listeners have not heard of it, as I hadn't either, and how you decided to incorporate that into your novel.
Sure. The book touches fairly briefly on it, as the main character, Pepper Hunt, uses equine therapy as part of her own healing process. But basically what it is that therapists trained to deal with human beings and horses bring a troubled person, that could be any kind of trouble, it usually it's some sort of fear in life. They bring the person together with the animal, and words are not part of it. It's really just the person gets to learn by reacting to what the horse is doing, because horses are great communicators. They are very receptive to human experience. So if a person is afraid, they'll get skittish. If a person is angry, they will also kind of like back away. So the job of the person in equine therapy, what they're wanting to do is to learn more about themselves and how to communicate and how to trust again. One of the cases I recently was reading about was a therapist working with a woman who had been very severely abused as a child. And the first session, they were not even thinking about having her be anywhere on the horse, but simply near the horse. And she said it was a very moving experience, because after about a half an hour of the woman sitting in the pasture near the horse, she said, "This is the first time I've had a feeling of safety around someone or something bigger than me."
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. So how much did you use? I mean, I'm sure you used your professional background a lot in writing your novel. I mean, certainly my experience taking my work in Palestine and trying to put it into a novel, a lot of the process that I had to learn was to let go of what really happened and what it's really like, and somehow try to give the feeling of what it's like to be there and doing that work without thinking that you have to write everything about what you're really doing on the day to day. And I would imagine that writing therapy into a novel is similar. Is that true?
So it's interesting, because part of being a therapist is to be able to like separate from it, it's like almost as it's happening, to be present enough to be empathic, but not so present that you get, you know, caught up in the other person's experience. So in that sense, it was a similar process of being able to see what the character was doing without necessarily like infusing anything from my own experience.
You are listening to Women's Magazine on KPFA 94.1 FM and online at kpfa.org. I'm Kate Raphael. I am speaking with Joanne Doucette, whose novel Last Seen is a psychological thriller that takes place in the harsh Wyoming desert and on the Wind River Reservation. We are joined also by Michelle Cox, author of a historical mystery series set in Chicago in the 1930s. The second in her series, A Ring of Truth, was released in the spring. Michelle, one of the kind of distinguishing characteristics of your character, Henrietta, is that she's really gorgeous. And I was sort of immediately put off by that because I'm like, it's not that I have anything against beautiful women, but there was something about that. I'm like, I don't know. I think I do have prejudices against beautiful, very beautiful people in some ways of like, well, why should I be interested in her? She has no problems. But what's cool too about that is that there's a point where she starts to think about what her beauty means to her and in her life and how important it seems to be and that maybe that's not such a great thing. And I thought that was a very good choice that you made. And I wondered, did you have that in mind when you started, or is that something that came from getting to know Henrietta through the writing process?
I get what you're saying, because I think that that's not my initial perfect heroine either, to have this beautiful, gorgeous woman. But that was one of the aspects of this woman in the nursing home, is that she was this beautiful knockout, in the 30s. And she used to tell me that she had a man-stopping body and a personality to go with it. And I just thought, you know, I have to keep that detail. It's fantastic. And also, I do think it serves a purpose, because she told me that it was the Depression, Chicago, but she never had a problem getting a job because of her looks. But she was always getting fired from her jobs because every manager or somebody, owner, was always feeling her up. And she would slap them, and out she'd go. And that took a lot of courage, I think, to stand up to these guys who were trying to feel her up, because it was a depression, and she had to care for her family. And the part that I fictionalized was her mother's reaction to that. So her mom is, you know, always complaining in the book that she's, you know, always getting fired, but then she's also judging her as being this sort of, you know, loose morals type of woman, really just based on her looks. And that's really, not very fair, especially since it's coming from her mom.
How did you start writing, Joanne?
So I started writing very early with poetry, short stories. I did some feature writing for local magazines all throughout adulthood. The idea of being a novelist was a sort of fantasy. Until I actually sat down to begin to write this novel, I wasn't sure that I would be able to write something of that length and complexity. I happened upon a book in Barnes & Noble called No Plot, No Problem.
I love that book. That is my favorite writing book ever.
I love that book because it opened the door, right? This idea that these guys had, that the reason most people don't finish their novels is because they start and soon after become self-critical. And so the thing to do is just get 50,000 words out in 30 days. I thought, I can do that. But I do remember it was Halloween, right, of 2009, and I had this feeling come over me like I was about to, like, you know, jump off, a diving board, because I had committed to doing it. It was terrifying. Can I really do this? Can I get to the end of the month and produce a story? So I did, and that's how I wrote the first draft of Last Seen, which has had three other titles and all kinds of revisions, and took 5 years from that point to come to the final manuscript.
You know, I love that story because I also, so I should just back up and say that No Plot, No Problem is by a guy named Chris Beatty, B-A-T-Y, and he was one of the creators of National Novel Writing Month, NaNoWriMo, which is now this enormous thing that millions of people participate in. Every year in November, the idea is to write a novel of at least 50,000 words in the 30 days of November, but you can do it anytime. And I did my first draft of Murder Under the Bridge also on the NaNoWriMo model, although I didn't do it in November. I think it was in June. But, you know, I had tried a couple of other novels and put them down halfway through. And a lot, I think, having to do with that self-censoring. And I felt like this was the best tool that I had run across for just abandoning your censor. And I mean, it's so silly, and the book has all these funny things, and it, like, you know, give your characters lots of names, you know, to pad your word count, which is, of course, great if you're writing about Palestine, because Arab names have, like the traditional Arab name has four parts, the first name, father's name, grandfather's name, and surname. So there's four words. And then there's also the name that they're called. Like, if they have a child, then, you know, they'll be Joanne or whatever. So, you know, that's another couple names. So, and just things like, if you don't like something, strike through it. Don't delete it, but strike through it. And then it still counts towards your word count. And, you know, it's just all of these things. But the real goal is to get you to just stop editing yourself as you go and trying to just really get it out, spill it out. And I really recommend it to people who want to, you know, who want to complete a project like that and haven't been able to do it like us. Michelle, what tools do you use? What are your favorite writing tools?
This is embarrassing, but I had a lit degree, but they never really teach you, you know, how to write a novel. So when I decided that I wanted to write a novel, I actually Googled how to write a novel and just read a bunch of sites.
That's so great.
Isn't that terrible? I came out with a big, gargantuan 240,000 word novel because I was trying to follow this three-act thing, but each act was a book. So I, you know, that went nowhere. So then I, you know, started over. And by that time, I think I had understood more, you know, arcs and that sort of thing.
Are you an outliner or are you a sit down and spit it out writer?
No, I'm a huge outliner. Yeah, I'm very type A. So I have to have a pretty hefty outline before I start.
So you're also, because your novels are historical, there's a lot of research involved. How do you do that research, and do you do all your research and then start writing, or do you mix it in?
No, I don't. I'm kind of a weirdo with that because I know a lot of historical novelists, that's their favorite part, is to do the research, and they go down these research rabbit holes, and they're happy down there. They don't ever want to come out. So, but for me, it's not so much about that. If I just write, and if there's a section where I know I need to look up what car Clive would have been driving, then I just put XXXX, and then once the whole first draft is done, then I'll go back and fill in the blanks.
Have you done any research that involves, like, calling up somebody that you don't know and saying, oh, I need to learn about insurance in the 30s, can you school me on that?
No, not really, because there's so much on the internet. I mean, really, it seems like a lazy way out, but really, you can find, as we all know, anything on there. And I also try not to put in a ton of details, because I think that really bogs the reader down, and they want to know a little bit, but not too much. I mean, it's different than, like, Dickens, who's taking a page to describe a chair. People nowadays don't want to read that. Just give me a little snapshot and move on.
Yeah, and that's kind of tricky to find the exact right detail that will pull people into the place. I mean, going back to what we started off talking about trying to create a really strong sense of place, that it is really tricky to figure out the details that will give people that strong sense of place without overburdening them. And I know I do not like to read description. I mean, if there's a page of description, I will skim it.
Yeah.
So I don't want to write one since I can't read it. And yet, I mean, my books don't work if people don't have a strong sense of the place. Joanne, you were not living in Wyoming when you started Last Scene, or were you?
No, I haven't lived in Wyoming for a number of years now. I moved back to Rhode Island in 2005. And I think another reason that I set the story there is because, though I really was not happy in Wyoming when I first arrived, as with many experiences that you first resist, it was a very powerful place. It was a very powerful time in my life. I'm very much admire the people who have lived in that state and are native Wyoming people. And so basically I fell in love with Wyoming, and writing about it is a way of continuing to be in touch with it.
That was Joanne Doucette, whose debut novel, Last Scene, was a finalist for the Next Gen Indie Book Award. JLDoucette.com is where you can get information about Last Scene and how to get hold of it. We also spoke with Michelle Cox, author of the Henrietta and Inspector Howard series. Her website is MichelleCoxAuthor.com. We'll put those links on our website, kpfawomensmag.blogspot.com, which is also the best place to find archive segments and links to all of today's guests. A reminder that tomorrow night I'll be celebrating the launch of my second novel, Murder Under the Fig Tree, at 7 p.m., 518 Valencia in San Francisco. That's a benefit for Middle East Children's Alliance. There will be Middle Eastern food and cake. MeccaForPeace.org has more information about that event.